human beings learn best when they're thinking about the tool that's in their hand, right? You think about what the fork is going to do, not what your wrist is doing to move the fork. You think about moving the spoon to your lips, not about, you know, pronation and supination and of your forearm to do it. So that's how we learn to use tools as humans.
And welcome back. Welcome aboard another Heart Train. I'm one of your hosts, Ev. I got Serm with me.
What's up, Ev? It's great to be back. We just had a great episode with our friend Keith Bennett.
Yeah, one of my favorite coaches on Instagram and YouTube. You guys are going to love it. A rapid fire mailbag episode. We got through like 10-ish questions. We cover all parts of the game. But before we get to that, first, in case you guys are new, we help frustrated golfers enjoy the ride again, because if you can learn to smile through bad golf, you can smile through anything. We unpack the mental game with anyone from a tour pro to an author to a coach today, and golfers like you and me. And I think you guys are really going to get a lot out of this podcast. And before we get to this interview with Keith and this mailbag, we first got to tell you about our friends at Roback Activewear.
Oh,
just dropped, I think they call them the Blitz Tech hoodie. So everyone knows I'm wearing it right now. Roback's hoodies are, it's not even an argument now. It's pretty much cemented. Probably the best hoodie in the world is the Roback hoodie. If you don't have a Roback hoodie and you've been listening to this show, I really don't know what to say to you. I don't know what you've been doing. So if you don't have a hoodie,
wake up,
go to roback.com, enter the code train, get 15% off and get yourself one. But now the Blitz Tech hoodie, I never thought, Serm, that
NFL
I would want
Blitz.
N64. Heard of it? I never thought I would want one of these lighter hoodies, because I love the stretchy, soft, warmer feel of the hoodie.
Sure.
But this is too hot to wear in a workout. You're going to take it off within the first 10 minutes. But with a Blitz Tech hoodie, it's basically a performance tee material, but with a hood. So you want to talk about versatile? I wear it at workout classes. I wear it around town. I wear it around the house. It's just long sleeve. It feels like a long sleeve tee, which you and I both love, but with a hood and a much smaller, subtle dog logo on the shoulder. It's in a little circle now. So it's a little bit of more subtle branding, which some people have told me they like, because
yeah,
they don't love the big dog.
It depends. You know, I got the American flag on the back of this Q-zip today. So they're always doing
We're
great
looking
stuff.
Good. They're always doing new good stuff. So that's why we love, for many reasons, why we love having Roback as our presenting sponsor, because they're always dropping new stuff. They're always getting better, just like we're trying to do in our golf games. So roback.com, enter the code train, get 15% off. If it doesn't work, it means you've used it before or you've gotten stuff from them before. So you didn't hear it from us. Do whatever you have to do. Enter a new email, create an sbc.global.net. Do whatever you have to do. And if you forget the code, go to our Instagram at the Partrain and click the link in our bio. You'll see it. It'll auto apply in your cart. Don't need to worry about the code. So thanks to Roback as always. Okay. This episode with Keith at Keith Bennett Golf, one of my favorite follows. And we met him at the True Links event. We did a Swing Thoughts video with him, which did really well. I love Keith because Keith embraces the mental game. He played pro. He tried to make it, played on the mini tours. He was a late golfer. Didn't start playing until late, still play D1 at New Mexico State.
New Mexico State, yeah.
And now he's a great coach and a +4 as a player. So he's walked the walk. He's talking the talk. We covered pretty much every part of the game with these mailbag questions.
Yeah, no, it was awesome. I mean, it was fun meeting Keith last year down in Arizona. Like you said, the True Links event. It's got such a great golf swing. So simple, so on plane. So to have him on the show was a thrill, because like you said, his Instagram account is awesome, guys. You got to be following him on Instagram. But yeah, to do mental game mailbag with a guest is just so much fun. I mean, we have so much fun doing them together typically, but I think the second time we've done this format, and it was kind of like the old days, a little rapid fire, because we had so many great questions. And sorry, we couldn't get to all of them, guys, but we got to, like you said, I think around 10. Keith's awesome. Like we cover it all. We cover the short game. We cover wedge play.
Driver, a lot of swing changes.
Course management, everything you guys want, everything we talk about, but hearing it from another perspective, which is Keith's, from one of the top teaching professionals in Arizona and out in the West. It was a lot of fun, Ev. I think we just riffed really well back and forth too. Got into your game a little bit, Ev, kind of correlated to what you're working on with your swing changes.
Yeah.
just all felt very current. So it was really good.
Yeah, I agree. I loved it. So enough from us, guys. Let's get you to this conversation. If you like this podcast, hop aboard our Spotify, follow us on Spotify, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Our YouTube channel is growing fast.
Yeah, and check it out, guys.
Email newsletter at thepartrain.com to get you first access to merchandise drops and a newsletter every Monday. So no matter how awful your swing feels right now, no matter how much work you've put in the off season, no matter how much you're wondering if it's going to transfer to the course, what do they got to do, sir?
Just enjoy the ride.
Hey guys, enjoy the ride. Take care. Keith Bennett, one of our favorite people. We met in Arizona at the True Links event. Welcome aboard the Partrain, my man. We're pumped to have you.
I am pumped to be here. Yeah, our paths crossed kind of randomly there on one of those tee boxes. I can't remember what hole it was, but a little walk and talk, course management, sort of how you're going to play this hole. It was kind of a cool, you know, dealer's choice par four. You could either try to drive the green or you could lay it up and have like a bit of an awkward wedge shot in. And yeah, who knew we would you know, keep in touch and we'd end up on the pod. So I'm stoked it's full circle.
Keith, yeah. It's good to see you. Avi was the only guy who pulled out iron or driving iron and actually put it in play. Everybody was going for it with driver and hitting in the water.
You know, that experiment, Keith, just to give people context in case they don't know what we're talking about, that series, Swing Thought series, where we challenge you to make a par, I think it was hole 14, maybe.
Yeah, we had that short par four.
It was a short par four, water left. And it was so fascinating looking back on that. We might even get to this as we get to these questions. I'll get to the mailbag format in a second. But wasn't it so eye-opening, sir, how different Keith approached this hole than the 12 and the 10, even the five.
Handicaps,
it was, I think, I forget his name, but we had like a one handicap. And Keith, what are you now, Keith? Are you plus three?
I got to be somewhere in the plus three, plus four range currently, yeah.
So what was so fascinating about that was the 5, the 10, and the 12, or maybe it was just a 5 and a 12, I don't remember, but they hit driver off that tee.
Yeah.
And they just treated that hole like it was an easy kind of hole. And I'll never forget Keith talking about how hard this 70-yard shot was with a little downhill lie. I wouldn't even have noticed that lie was downhill, a little wind. I barely felt the wind. And you talked about how challenging it was, and you played 4-iron to put it in play because it was the percentage shot. It wasn't even a question for you to go driver. And it's just it's fascinating to me how the better players acknowledge the difficulty, but the worst players assume it's going to be easy. It's interesting.
Yeah. And I think some of that too, like when I reflect back on some of that stuff or just tournaments that I've played in general, like sometimes ignorance is bliss a little bit too, you know, like I heard Jason Day said something about this the other day. He's like, when you play golf at someone else's home course and they're like, yeah, just hit it up the right-hand side here. And they don't really know how far you hit it. And then you pipe a drive because you're just thinking about a target that they gave you. And then you get up there and you squeeze the driver through this little 10-yard window between like water and bunker. And they're like, oh man, I didn't think you'd hit it that far. And you're like, yeah looking back, I wouldn't hit driver. But you smoke driver and now you've got like a wedge in your hand. So like, I think golf is an interesting mix of, yes, there's analytics. Yes, there's the percentages and all that, which I adhere to a lot. But I think sometimes ignorance is bliss is like, you got to ride that knife's edge a little bit of like, you know, what could go right here instead of what could go wrong. And then also understanding, well, if I'm going to play this shot 100 times, there's a good chance I'm going to tug my driver into that water on that par four, 50 of them. Right. And that's not the best odds for a healthy strategy long-term.
Totally. So like I told you off air, Keith, normally we do the mailbag, just Serm and I. Today's fun. Today's special. We brought Keith on, who's a great coach. You guys got to follow him at Keith Bennett Golf. Before we dig into, we're going to try and get to as many of these questions as we can. Any context you want to give people, other than obviously what we're going to say in the intro, that will give people a good idea of either your philosophy, you as a golfer, then transition to a coach? I think that'd be helpful before we dig in.
Yeah, for sure. You know, so I played golf at New Mexico State. My background is actually in professional snowboarding. So I was a professional snowboarder until I was like 18. Some injuries caught up with me, and that was just kind of fizzling out, and golf was turning into a passion at that point. So I got into the golf program at New Mexico State. I walked my way onto the golf team a couple of years later just through hard work and playing some good events, and then tried to play professionally right out of college. And I think that that couple of years of trying to play professionally really made me a better teacher, because I really just learned from the mistakes that I made and how I approached the game. You know, as far as technique goes, I was very internally focused on like body part motion. You know, this arm should move this way. This knee needs to move this amount. This hip needs to move this amount. And that wasn't how I played other sports. And there was a conflict mentally for me. So I came out of that a better player, was introduced to some really good mentors of mine, Henry Stettina and Ed LeBeau, who introduced me to more of a what's called an external focus. So focusing more on the target, what the club is doing, what I want the golf ball to do. And that resonated really, really well. And I started playing some of my best golf. And then I was introduced more to course management side of things, like Scott Fawcett's Decade System and Mark Brody. I read Mark Brody's book, Every Shot Counts. And that opened my eyes to, hey, I don't have to be perfect on the golf course. It's actually managing my bad shots and understanding where the center of my dispersion pattern is going to be. And those two things just took my game to a whole new level and took my coaching to a really, you know, good place. And that's kind of what brought me here today. And those are like pretty much the core tenets of what I teach, is like human beings learn best when they're thinking about the tool that's in their hand, right? You think about what the fork is going to do, not what your wrist is doing to move the fork. You think about moving the spoon to your lips, not about, you know, pronation and supination and of your forearm to do it. So that's how we learn to use tools as humans. And so a golf club is a tool. We need to learn how to move the club to move the ball, because after all, the club's the only thing hitting the ball. And so like that just all made so much sense. And that's how we learn as humans. And then, you know, tying that in with, I don't have to be perfect when I hit shots. And that took a lot of weight off my shoulders, understanding dispersion patterns. And so kind of in a little summary, that's basically like the core beliefs of kind of what I teach. And, you know, there's some flexibility within there, but that's more or less what it is.
Well, I think this is going to be perfect for this conversation and for these questions too, Keith, because you got to get the, you know, a lot of these people wrote into us or, you know, maybe are obviously struggling with something in their game. Right. Yep. But get them back to playing golf, maybe too much thinking about golf. Right.
Yep.
Yeah. Keith, my coach literally just told me we're talking on the phone a few days ago, and he says, we just got to make sure that when you're driving your golf car down the road, meaning I'm playing a round of golf, I got to get behind the wheel and drive. I can't have my head in the hood.
Yeah.
While the car is moving. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Which I thought was a really great analogy. We might need to do a whole other episode on snowboarding, because when you said that, I forgot that you did pro snowboarding.
Yeah.
And I've had some interesting and scary experiences where I could not commit to the speed that I was going. And I got into a pretty gnarly crash into a tree
I didn't know that.
In the powder, and I couldn't get out, and I was alone in the forest. That's a story for another time.
But holy, there's a lot hear this. Of, yeah, we got to talk off.
Can I just tell it real quick? So real quick story before we get into the questions.
Yeah.
I was with my buddies in Winter Park. One of my buddies from growing up lives there. And they are all, you know, I'm a decent snowboarder. I used to snowboard. I'm from St. Louis, so I would go down this, it was called Hidden Valley, like a place that blows its own snow. It was really icy, so I learned on icy snow. But I've been snowboarding since I was in middle school. But I snowboarded like once a year as I got older. So I go up to Winter Park, and my buddy Luke and his brother jumps down this unmarked area in the trees. So excited to get fresh powder, right? Well, there were these pre-carved zones, not that much deeper than the width of a snowboard that you just kind of had to stay in.
Yep.
And you had to maintain enough speed. But there was also like really tight turns. And I didn't know how to make such tight, precise turns. Yeah. And if I lose speed, I would get caught.
Yep.
So it was this constant battle of like, oh, I think I'm going too fast, but I also feel a little out of control, but I have to stay on this path. And then originally I just got too fast. I kind of freaked out and I hit a tree And you know how the powder around the base of a tree can drop down. So essentially, to make the long story short, about 2 feet of snow got on top of my board.
Yeah.
I couldn't get out. I was alone. Everyone else left and were down the thing. And I was like freaking out. I felt like I couldn't breathe. And I had eventually I like laid down to try and relax. And when I laid down, I realized I could lift my board out vertically and cut through the snow. And I got out and I was like, I'm never going in unmarked areas again. So long story short, there's some commitment stuff in there.
That was a good moment for sure. Mindfulness for you, Av. You know?
It was. I had to for sure calm myself down because in the moment it was a nightmare scenario. But
for sure. Yeah.
Let's get to golf, shall we?
You're stoked you didn't end up head first in that tree. Well, that could have been sketchy. Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. Okay. Question one. This is from Cameron_McEwen. How to best tackle the mental fears of bad scores during a swing change? I'm going through this now. So this is something that's close to heart. I think a lot of people struggle with this. You're making a swing change. You want to commit to it, but there's also a lot of fear taking that to the course, especially with the score. So when you're working with your players, I know you have your 1% program and different things, guys you work with and gals, how do you help them take this swing change to the score and battle the mental?
This is maybe one of the most common questions I get as a coach. And the thing is, like, if you've attached your identity to the score that you're going to shoot, you'll almost never make a swing change. Because if you feel that shooting 5 or 10 strokes higher makes you a lesser person, or you're going to be seen in the eyes of your, you know, playing partners as lesser than what they used to see you as, or just that fear of, you know, being worse than you were, you'll never commit to the swing change. Everybody has to struggle a little bit. There's just no way you can come out of the blocks and play as good or better tweaking anything, right? The brain is too powerful. It's done the same movement pattern for too long and it's just too ingrained. And so you need to remove your ego from the equation and say, you know what? I'm willing to sacrifice a handful of rounds score wise in the early goings so that I can play the rest of my life the golf I want to play. And when you think of it that way, it's not that big of a sacrifice. But if you're only thinking about the next round you're about to play and, oh my God, what if I shoot 100, you'll revert right back to what you've been doing. So it's really like removing your identity from the score and saying, I'm out here to learn a new swing change. If I hit one shot that I wasn't capable of hitting prior to this swing change, it's worth it. I can see the benefits. I'm going to stick with it. But, you know, it's having that fear mentality of like, oh my God, I don't want to be any worse than I am, you know, then you won't commit to it, if that makes sense.
Serm, what did you and Daly keep telling me as I've been going through swing changes?
You got to go out and play.
What did you call it?
What did I call it?
Do you remember what you called it?
No, because you're doing a lot of practice. You need reps. Yeah.
I need competitive reps.
And like, too much range time. The way you're going to learn is on the course, right? Yeah. Keith, I mean, that's it.
And I think that was the key. That's been the key for me, Keith. And to give Cameron, you know, it's sometimes I always want to make sure that it's easy when you talk about the mental side, like we do, that it can come off very theoretical. And I always try and make sure people have the tactical as well, because it's easy to say, take your ego out of it, but it's deep ingrained in who we are. A lot of us obsessive golfers. So for me, as I've been going through swing changes, and I think the most important thing I've learned, Serm's point and his college teammates' point, Daly, who would tell me, you just need reps. I would treat it as, let me try and understand what's happening and what are my precise struggles. So my coach, Josh, would say, I'm trying to get you to play like an athlete. Let's try and, you know, have it set, feel the rhythm and release, and try and see as many shots as you try and hit as many shots as you can with rhythm without trying, because I try and kill it, you know, and that throws a lot of stuff out of whack. But then what happens when I didn't? Was it fear of the miss? Did I lose focus? And then when I did it, what was I focused on? So basically what I was doing to Cameron listening is I was recording data to then send to my coach, Josh. That's why follow-up lessons are even more important than the first one, because I can then say, hey, that thing that made so much sense in our lesson, I actually realized didn't. And I had all of these questions, or it felt like this when I was out there. Yep. And my tendency was a high right when I was under pressure. Let's look at that. Why is that? Right. So I'm trying to get smarter. And that really helped me, going back to the tactical, to get out of the ego, because I'm gathering information. I'm not trying to score well. I'm trying to learn. And I think that could be for every round, even not even people that are going through a swing change. I think that's what rounds are. I think you said this, Keith. Didn't you say practice is studying and playing is the exam?
Yeah, exactly. I like to think of playing golf as the examination, and my practice is studying for the exam. And so I want to know, what am I going to be asked about on the exam, right? I'm going to be asked to hit shots that aren't my regular 7-iron distance, right? I'm going to be stuck between a 7 and an 8. I got to know how to hit a soft 7. So if I'm not practicing out on the range, I'm essentially saying I'm not preparing myself properly for the exam. And every exam comes around every semester, and lo and behold, I'm asked to hit a soft 7. And if I keep hitting full 8s and full 7s on the range, I'm not going to pass the cut. I'm not going to pass the course. And I'm sorry. Yeah. At some point, that's on you, you know, and you know, that's a bit of an aside from the swing change thing, but I think there's a really good process that also Tiger said that he went through for his swing changes that I think makes so much sense, where it's like, he wanted to see it look the way he wanted it on film on the range, right? He wanted it to see it the way he wanted it on film playing by himself, right? Then he wanted to take it to basically competition. And then he wanted to take it to a back nine when he had a chance to win. So like, there's a process for it. I think as the coach, it's the responsibility to talk players through that process so that they're not going, well, I've taken a few lessons with you. This should be translating to the course pretty quickly, right? And it's like, for some people, yeah, I've seen it where some people do take it right to the course. And it's like, you got it, man. Kudos. But other players, that process doesn't work exactly the same. So I would say, you know, to Cameron, understand the likely process that the swing change is going to have to take before it takes hold on the golf course, and just have fun with it. Enjoy the better shots that you weren't able to hit a month ago, right? And let that fuel you and go, you know, I see the potential. It's not every time, but I see what I'm capable of if I do this right. And let that keep, you know, the snowball rolling.
Yeah. And by the way, you can't improve or know that you need to practice the soft 7 if you don't become aware that that was information that you experienced struggle or you didn't know how to do from the round. So again, if you're not gathering information from the round, you don't know that the next examination is going to have a soft 7 that you have to practice and study for.
But I would say you have to practice it all the time, even if you struggle or not.
Yeah. Yes.
You have to, you know, because it's always going to come up.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. People
you're
are
always
like,
going to be true. You're always going to be within yardages. That's a good point.
People are, you know, my friend Nick said this the other day. He's like, man, people come off the course and they're like, I just had a lot of in between numbers today. And he's like, yeah. So you mean you played golf? Like, I just started cracking up. I was like, yeah. When are we going to figure out that we don't have just perfect 150 yard yardages? It's a nice smooth 8 to a middle flag every time. Like, it just doesn't exist. And yet we're like, oh man, I don't have that shot. Well, you better get that shot because it's coming up on the next exam, like tomorrow when you play again.
Yeah.
That's good. Wow, we're diving deep early here, right out of the gates.
All right, the train's going to make a quick stop. Don't panic. We'll get it moving in a second. But first, I wanted to ask you guys, have you been really focused on getting off that struggle bus? Are you trying to play the best golf of your life in 2024? I feel you. I'm on that same journey. I want us to go on it together and keep moving towards our best golf of our life this year. Best way to do it, do us a solid, hop over to our YouTube channel. Actually, you can watch all of these podcasts in video form on our YouTube channel. My lessons are there every week, as well as all the other videos we're making to help you enjoy the ride on and off the course. So do us a solid. It would mean the world. If you like the podcast, you'll love the YouTube. Go to youtube.com/@thepartrain. Hop aboard the channel and subscribe. It'll mean the world. And let's all get playing our best golf in 2024. Thanks, guys. Let's get this show back on track.
All right, question two. This is from the Kyle Beers. Who doesn't love that name?
Like it.
This is interesting. I struggle feeling like I deserve pars and birdies. What should I do?
Wow. Deserve pars and birdies. This might be a deeper topic.
We go deep golf. On the train. We go deep here.
What do you have to say to Kyle there, Keith? Kyle Beers.
Yeah, I mean that's an interesting question. I think it's maybe almost taking it too deep for what it is. Like, golf is a game, right? It's a fun game. It's supposed to be played. It's supposed to be challenging. It's supposed to test you. It's supposed to reward you in times, right? And I think if we attach too much meaning to this game, which is easy to do because it so parallels life in so many great ways. That's why I think we love the game so much. But I think if we put so much emphasis on these things, we psych ourselves out. And that's what it sounds like Kyle is doing, is like putting too much emphasis on that 5-footer for birdie. Like, I don't deserve this. Like, of course you deserve it. You've put in the time, you've practiced. You're there for 5 feet for birdie. You got yourself there. Like, of course you deserve it, right? And it's a game. It's supposed to be fun. You're not supposed to win every time, right? You're supposed to lose. If you won every time, you'd get bored of the game, right? You're supposed to lose. That's what brings you back. So I would say, like, treat it a little bit more, just like a little bit more lightheartedly as far as like how much attachment you place to on these, these scores. And at the end of the day, let's think about what gets you that score. A score is just a culmination of good swings, right? Good shots are just good swings.
Yeah, sometimes just one.
And so if you can put more emphasis on, hey, I'm going to make a good stroke, or I'm going to make a good swing, and I really don't have anything to do with this outcome. If it hits a little pebble I didn't see on the green, this ball might not go in, right? If I can put a good stroke on it and I could say that I got myself mentally in a committed place to my target, that's all you can do. That's all you can do. And you go and do it on the next hole until you run out of holes, and then you go and play again the next day.
That, I love it.
Yeah. I just played with quick story. I played with three older guys last week, and we were talking about what we did, and the podcast came up, and he told me immediately, he goes, oh, I got to listen. I really struggle with short putts. Right. And there's this perceived assumption that it should go in.
Yep.
And I told him about the thing we learned, Serm, from Dr. Joe Parent. And he asked us, are you allowed to put it in the hole? Or, no, we can't pick it up and put it in the hole. Your job is to get it started. So that makes me think for Kyle too. Like, if you're standing over a putt, as the example you gave, Keith, of like, not sure if I deserve this par or birdie, that's creating that tension, that's probably not the most productive thing to be thinking. Where if your job is to get it started, I'd ask yourself, can you putt it an inch in front of you?
Yep.
And did you putt it over your mark? Yes or no? If it's yes, then you made your putt. And to your point, Keith, if you just do that, you're going to look up and you just might have made four pars in a row without thinking that you deserved it. So I think Kyle's question, it might sound deep, it might sound like, you know, he's taking everything too seriously, but it's a great reminder. This game, just like life, is all about coming back. And that tells you, maybe I'm off track a little bit. I got to come back to what can help me, you know? So I think that was a good question.
Yeah. Process over results, right? So just get back into what I would tell for everybody is I would write it down, on a notepad, step by step, what you're going to do next time you're in that situation. Because guess what? That feeling of, am I worthy, is going to come up on your next exam, right?
Yeah.
And so you need a process, just like you have a process for solving a math problem. You have to have a process for beating that thought that's going to come up. And so if you have a step-by-step guide to do that, you'll run the steps and soon you'll be out of that, you know, fear-based outcome result mindset.
All right. Third question. Driver versus iron swing. I can't hit the big dog to save my life. Help. This is from at J Rojo. Something a lot of us struggle with or have struggled with.
Yes. So the driver versus iron swing is interesting in that this happens all the time on my lesson tee, where someone comes in and they're hitting, they can really hit their driver well, and then they are thinning and chunking irons, or vice versa. They can hit their irons quite solidly, but then they're popping their driver up, or they're, you know, slicing their driver pretty substantially. Usually the best players can, the swing shape itself looks pretty similar. Like if you saw Rory swinging a six iron versus a driver, aesthetically very similar, but like what his feels are in the downswing and for the driver and the six iron are going to be quite different. Is he maybe thinking about those feels at this point in his career? Probably not. Does he think about them sometimes? Probably. But if he can't hit the big dog, but he can hit his irons, that tells me that his angle of attack is most likely, again, without seeing his swing, too steep, right? Too out to in. The hands in the club are too far out in front of him in transition. Now with an iron, you can get away with that quite often, right? But with a driver, because it's teed up and it's not on the ground, that driver typically tends to slip right underneath that golf ball. Or if you do manage to make the compensations necessary, the path is so far out to in that you're likely to hit a pretty substantial slice to the right. So I would say that we need to, in general, get your path more shallow for both irons and driver. You might struggle a little bit with your iron delivery in the early goings, but your driver is going to get better instantly, and you'll figure out your iron delivery quite easily in pretty short order. So again, always a little tough without seeing someone swing for like the variables they bring to the table. But that's, you know, when I see that come across, that's typically what's going on.
I think that's pretty, I think that's a good explanation, Keith. And this next question ties right in. And I think this is an incredibly smart question and something that really kind of tells a story about struggles. Okay. Driver man gives me problems. I'm good and okay. When I look at the hole and I like the look of the hole, I'm not okay when I don't like what I see. This is from Carlos Manuel Diaz Milan. And I think that's it, Keith. I mean, because guys, everybody can hit the driver when it's wide open. There's no trouble.
Yep.
If they hit a fade and it's a left to right hole. But talk about this. I think this is great.
You know, I was watching the live from the Players Championship this morning, and Jack Nicklaus was on there talking, and he said this exact same thing. He goes, you know, some players will come to me and they go, man, this course just doesn't fit my eye. And Jack said, you know, it's not your job to have the course fit your eye. It's your job to fit your game to the course. And that was like, whoa, that was an eye opener. Right. Mm. And it's like, well, yeah, Dustin Johnson has won at Harbortown, like one of the shortest courses on the PGA Tour Rota. And he's won the Masters, right? A longer course. And it's like, Dustin just hit four irons off the tee all day long at Harbortown and just wedged his way to victory. And so I think we need to, as golfers, understand that like the cool thing about golf is that it's not a uniform playing field every time. It's not a soccer field or a basketball court where the dimensions aren't going to change. Wind changes, the holes change, the length of holes, everything changes all the time. And so it's like it's solving a puzzle every time you step on a tee box. And it's being able to step back and go, man, this might not be a driver on this par four today. Some days it is, but the wind, I don't like the wind today. I gotta be able to hit a four iron out there to the corner of the dog leg and just, you know, normally I like to take it over the corner, but today it's just the wind isn't right. So it's having that adaptability to say, okay, I can't do it the same way every time, and having that flexibility in your game. And again, this comes back to the examination question. Like, hey, if I think I'm going to go out there and it's going to be 72 degrees with no wind, green speeds are going to be the same every single time. Like, I'm going to be pretty shocked by that exam when I go out there from day to day. And so when it doesn't suit your eye, you can't just sit there and hit the shot in fear. Your job is to be as committed as possible to the target and the shot that you've selected every time you step over a golf ball. So if that's a 5-iron off the tee on a par 5, because that's the only club you can get and play that day, it's the 5-iron. It's not the driver. It's the 5-iron. It's the club. There's a big difference between hitting the shot that you think you should be able to hit and hitting the shot that you know you can hit. And too many people try to hit the shot they think they should be able to hit. And if they play the shot they know they could, their scores would be lower, but they'd also be more committed to the swing every single time.
Keith, I think your example about DJ is so good for Carlos, because we're talking about one of the greatest players of the last 30 years who only hits a cut off the tee.
Yep.
So when he sees a right to left hole, DJ's not trying to overcompensate and hit some slinging draw to match the golf hole. So Carlos, think about Dustin Johnson thinks, man, I don't love the look of this hole. And there's going to be several of those, but I got to manage it to my strengths. So talk about that a little bit as we.
Yeah, that's so true.
Carlos on his way.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great example, right? And it happens all the time. There are several holes on my home golf course that I don't love the look of for whatever reason. I couldn't tell you why I don't love the look of it. It's just like my eye sees it and just doesn't prefer it. And then there's some holes that do, but what am I going to make a quad every time I play that hole just because I don't like it? Like, no, I mean, that's not how you play the game. So you have to figure out a tee shot on those holes. And guess what? Those holes aren't changing unless they blow up the golf course and they change the layout of your golf course. They're always going to be there. So find the club you're most comfortable with and understand, hey, you might not be able to make birdie on this hole. That's okay. A par or a bogey is going to be just fine, but we got to avoid those triples and those quads. And just because I'm not comfortable with a shot, that's no excuse to say, keep making quad on this hole. Like, okay, let's figure out a different strategy. I'll give you a couple of quads, maybe two, but I'm not giving you a third quad and saying this is okay. Like, figure out a different strategy at this point.
Yeah. I do want to jump in on this before we get to some short game questions. I do think this is important because as someone who was deathly scared of hitting the hotel on the 18th at St. Andrews with 100 yards left fairway to recently striping more fairways than I can remember at a private club with a lot of nerves going through a swing change, something I've really learned, and this might be very specific or it might be helpful to a lot of people, I'm not sure. But one thing I've learned is the power of getting my foundations right, meaning my grip, understanding. I told my coach, like, it feels like I'm unlocking doors that used to be access denied in my swing. Like, some things just feel open now that used to feel like I was really stuck and had nowhere to go, right? So I think getting those foundations are huge. You can't do it without that. That's the power of lessons. Two is I have found every single time I try and rip one, or every single time I try and really get under it or get around it or draw one, I block it because I think it gets outside me. I get way too quick. And every time at this country club in LA that my caddy kept saying, you have enough. Just do your normal swing. It would drop in the slot and I'd hit this perfect little baby cut or even a baby draw and pretty straight drive. And for someone, I'd never hit that straight of drives, like ever. So it seems like, I know you want to get to a place where you rip your driver, but if your foundations aren't right and you've got a lot of residual issues like Carlos and Jay wrote in about, slowing it down has been huge. Letting the club just drop on it has been huge for me. Not trying to manipulate or throw the head or do anything. That's been really, really helpful for me.
Yeah, everyone's got to find what their comfort zone is, what their keys are.
Yeah.
I mean, again, I want people to practice with the mentality of, okay, I'm standing over, I have 9 holes to go to shoot my best score. Like, how am I practicing for that? Because everyone wants to get there, but then they don't practice for when they're there. And so when they get there, it shocks them and they freak out, right? Like, so I would rather you understand, okay, if I can mentally conjure up a little bit of nerves on the range, right? Even though they're maybe not quite as nervy as I'm going to feel on the course, you can still mentally trick yourself a little bit into those feelings. And it's like, okay, what am I going to do in that moment? And to your point where you're like, stay within myself, slow down, right? Like let the club fall on the ball. Those have turned into keys that you've seen success with. And then your brain starts to link those things with success, helping you overcome that anxiety. And then now you have a powerful tool for the next time you're in that situation.
Yeah, Keith, this is great conversation. Just to wrap this up and this question, and to have, I mean, when we get to these holes we don't like, oftentimes we just think we have to hit the most amazing shot to overcome this moment.
Right.
When really, to what you were getting at about club selection, no, we just have to stop, dig in, really strategize, and just maybe take a different club and a different line and a different shape. But
yeah,
I just wanted to add that in. Yeah.
Well, that kind of checks off Buttercuts Pod's question of making poor choices on the course, always thinking about the hero shot, right? I think that answer kind of applies to that too. All right, the train is slowing down. We're going to make a quick stop. Don't worry. We'll get it right back on track in a second. But first, we have hit springtime, and springtime is arguably the best time of the year. Don't tell that to my allergies. I think this is the best time of year because it's really when golf season starts for most of the world. And also it means the Masters is going to be here very soon. So you know what that means? The Azalea collection is back for Roback Activewear, my favorite collection in apparel. They've got a bunch of new designs. They've got spring polo designs. They've got spring colors. They've got the Azalea print, the polo that got me 10,854 compliments when I went to the Masters a couple years ago. I ran into like 10 other people wearing it, and it was like this secret society. We were pounding fists. It was awesome. So go to roback.com, tap the link in our show notes, or go to our Instagram at the Partrain, and that 15% will auto apply in your cart. If it doesn't work, it means you've used it before. So get creative, do whatever you have to do, create a new email, whatever. Didn't hear it from us. It's springtime. You deserve some new golf get up for the season. Look good, feel good, baby. So tap the link in our show notes or in our bio at the Partrain on Instagram is probably the best place to do it. And tap the Roback link. It'll auto apply in your cart, 15% off. Happy spring, everybody. Pumped for the Masters. It's going to be here soon. Hope you guys get some new gear. All right, let's get back to the show. So next question. David Duval 36 asks.
The real David Duval?
Not sure if this. I don't think it's the real one.
Double D.
Double D probably feels like he's the real
Oakley's
one.
Oakley's wraparound.
You know, he's his true David Duval self in his own way. A lot of inconsistency with 20 to 50-yard shots. Help. And then Bretzky 64 asked in the same notion, I've lost all confidence with my wedges. We'll get to that second, but let's start with 20 to 50 yard shots.
Yeah. Practice some more.
They're hard.
Yeah.
They're hard because, and I empathize with this with a lot of people, with my students, I go, where around you do you have a really good, well-mown, not crazy crowded practice facility where you can do that and hit your own golf balls, like hit a bag of your own balls that you play with? And everyone said, I don't have that, right? Unless you're a member at a private club, which, you know, few of us are. So it's just a matter. It's simply like, if it's a technique thing, right, then that's, you know, a conversation in itself. If it's merely a reps thing, then you have to find quiet moments on the golf course in the late afternoons or early mornings to get out on the golf course and practice those shots. If you don't have those at your disposal, because practicing them off of, you know, mats at the range, isn't going to get it done for those types of shots. I'd be curious to know if it was a technique thing here, that's why he's struggling, or if it's just merely like, I don't know the length of swings to be making. I don't know how much effort to put into these shots. Cause those are two very different like directions you could go.
Keith, I mean, obviously we'd say 20 to 50 yard shots if we are going over a bunker, if we have a tight pin. The feel is just is always challenging. What's your thoughts there? And maybe that's around mental, but you got to be a little smarter with your line, but talk about
and
that.
And target, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I think it comes back to hitting the shot you know you can hit and not the shot you think you should hit. Every time in my lessons, I get players to use less loft around the greens. rarely do I have players hit a lot of shots with 60 degree wedges. I introduce people to pitching wedge like motions and nine irons. And we even talk about putting from off the green. Like I have people practice putting from off the green. I mean, Martin Keimer won a US Open at Pinehurst putting around bunkers, right? Like it's about getting the ball in the freaking hole. It's not about how it looks. It's not about, hey, this is the shot that Rory hit in the Ryder Cup and zipped it in there and stopped on a dime. Like it's about doing what is going to get you the best outcome 10 times out of 10 and not, you know, the coolest looking outcome once out of 10. So like from a mentality standpoint, I change people's perspectives chipping all the time by teaching them just like a putting stroke with a pitching wedge or a nine iron. It's like basically like a putt chip, or like putting with loft is kind of what I call it. And people are like, they're like, oh, I've never even used a pitching wedge around the green, or never even thought to use a nine iron, right? And it opens up their world. So unless you have to go over a bunker, take less loft, please. It's going to help you immensely.
Now, why can't someone, if someone's listening and they're thinking, well, if it's a distance thing, why can't I practice that at the range? Are those reps better than no reps? Let's dig into your comment about why the range won't help on these shots.
So hitting off of mats, right? Like you can hit it 2 inches heavy and the ball will still fly perfectly. Like, and that's not good feedback for short shots around the green. Cause that tells you if you're doing that consistently and maybe you don't have the awareness quite yet that you're hitting it a little heavy, right? Then you get on the course and that's going to be a big surprise for you when you chunk it or you thin it over the green. And you would need to be working on your low point being more ahead of the golf ball in that, you know, in that scenario. Now, could you work on length of swing if you're making solid contact? Yes, you could. The other thing is issue-wise with range balls, as I'm sure you found out, if you play a premium, you know, a soft covered golf ball, it launches lower with more spin. So if I'm practicing with a top flight range ball, it's going to launch high with no spin. So my feel for a 20-yard shot with a top flight is immensely different than my feel with a Pro V1 or whatever premium ball you play, simply because of how it reacts and how it flies. So like my brother, David, who's a PGA professional, taught me this long ago. Like one of the first things he gave me was one of his old bags of, you know, slightly used balls to go practice. He said, never putt or chip with a range ball, right? That was one of the first things he instilled in me. And I haven't to this day, because it doesn't do your feel any good. Now, again, that's why I'm saying most people don't have access to this. So the next best thing you could do is practice the length of swing that is required to a 20-yard target with the range ball off of a mat. Is it better than nothing? Absolutely, right? But there is a transition that has to be made unless you're playing with the exact range ball you practice with on the course. You will see a different flight. I did a video with this for some of my online subscribers. I hit just a 10-yard shot with a premium ball and a 10-yard shot with a range ball. And the spin was 1,000 spin less with the range ball and 2 degrees higher launch. And so it's like, it's just harder to gauge.
Yeah.
Now, Bretzky, 64, says he's lost all confidence with his wedges. Now, obviously, one downside of written in questions is I can't follow up and understand more context. Does he mean full shots? Let's assume every shot with a wedge in his hand, he's lost all confidence in. We can all relate to this. You have enough bad outcomes with a certain club or group of clubs in your bag. It doesn't feel good when you have to go then hit it. So where do you start with a player here that's lost all their confidence with their wedges?
Normally that comes from them trying, like making too big of a swing. So for me with wedges, you look at all the best wedge players and none of them made full swings. Phil Mickelson being a perfect example. Tiger being a perfect example. Stricker being a perfect example. Luke Donald, all these phenomenal wedge players, the best. They all had abbreviated backswings and abbreviated follow-throughs. They never tried to, they could on the range maybe max out their 60 degree 100 yards, but they probably never tried to hit it more than 75 yards on the golf course. And so I would say, for most people struggling with their wedges, it's truly take your backswing back to about lead arm parallel to the ground. So for right-handed players, that's your left arm, basically like going back to like 9 o'clock or, you know, lead arm parallel to the ground. and swing forward to trail arm or right arm parallel to the ground. So like a 9 o'clock to 3 o'clock swing with your arms and see how far that ball is going. I promise you, your contact is going to get better and you don't need to hit it any further than that with your wedges, right? And your flight will get a little lower, which is all what all best wedge players do, and your contact will improve. So again, without much context or seeing their swing, shorten that baby up and you'll be playing better wedge play pretty quickly.
Keith, I think you would probably say too, a little back in the stance, right? With these wedge shots. I mean, we're trying to drive these things in low, you know, or medium trajectory at least. Talk about that.
Yeah. Forward ball position is the killer of most amateurs' games from my experience, just across the board from driver through every club in the bag. That's part of the reason they come over the top. It's a big reason anyway, that they come over the top is because the ball position is too far forward. So with the wedges, I like to see it about a half a ball back of center. I don't like to get it too far back because then divots get really deep and the path gets moving way out to the right. So like Hogan said, if you move it too far back in your stance, you got to offset it by opening your stance so that your swing direction is more neutral. So there's some compensations that have to be made if the ball gets way far back. But a little back of center is definitely where I like to see the ball position.
And Ev, don't you think when we have a wedge in our hand, we feel like, back to our word, deserve, we deserve to have a birdie chance, but we have a 7-iron or 6-iron in our hand, we're just happy if it's on the green. And this is a whole messed up perception and approach I think we often struggle with.
Well, think about a par 5, right? Let's say you're 30 yards off the green and you put it to 20 feet. Well, let's say 15 feet. You're probably like a little disappointed. Oh, I really would have loved the tap in birdie. We all know the stats and everything of pros, and it helps us manage our expectations. But the funny thing is if you put any other approach shot on a par 4, a long par 4, where you're hitting a mid to a long iron and you put it 15 feet and you got a 15 foot look for birdie, you're pretty pumped, right? Yep. So it's just our perception of what we deserve, to your point, sir, that determines our emotional reaction to it.
Yeah.
So
that's
true.
Really well said. Really well said. I think that's why people feel better about laying up to 100 yards on par 5s, because a wedge, you know, if they hit that 100 yard wedge to 15 feet, they're like, yeah, stuffed it. Great shot. To your point, the same 30 yard chip to 16 feet, 1 foot further away, feels like a horrible outcome.
Yeah.
And it's probably going to lend itself to the same score or maybe a lower score if you keep going from, if you hit 100 shots from 30 yards, your average proximity is going to be infinitely tighter than your at proximity from 100 yards. But, you know, we can only see one outcome at a time. We don't get to like play a simulation in our game to go, you know, oh, from a hunt for 100 in a row, I'm going to be better from 30 yards than I am from 100.
All right, Keith, we want to sneak in a putting question and then maybe end with one or two more around the mental and preparation. So this is interesting because it gets maybe a little into mechanics, but pulling putts, struggling with the line and having the confidence to roll it where I want to. This is from Nick_Gunther. Pulling putts, getting offline quick, the dreaded feeling. Talk about this.
I think if you look at the best putters throughout time, and all putters really on the PGA Tour, if you opened up the golf bag of every player on the PGA Tour, aside from a handful, they're all going to have some sort of mirrored putting device in their bag, right? And they're all going to use some sort of drill that helps them start their ball online. You know, famously, Tiger would put two tees on either side of his putter face on the toe and the heel, and he would basically use it as a gate to make sure that he was making center face contact and to make sure that his path was moving towards the target at impact. A couple of my favorite devices are the Pels putting tutor or the putting plates. These are two devices that basically you put them on the ground, you aim it at the hole. It's got two slots for you to put tees in at the end of the device, or two little marbles in the case of the Pels putting tutor. And if you pull it offline, you'll knock one of the little marbles out of its little holster. And you basically just use that as feedback until you can roll the ball through the marbles or roll the ball through the tees. So this is the easiest fix of all putting mechanics, because it's just about doing some, you know, just productive practice and learning what it feels like. Most people who pull it have to feel like they're pushing it to just to hit a straight putt, because to them, it has to feel like they're going to leave the face open to not pull it. But you'll find out really quick, and you'll get a pretty darn quick solution by getting some of these drills in place.
Come on, Nick, you got to write these down. These devices, these are some just, it's just old school. And you just,
that's also a great example. Feedback. Why is every player in the world at a PGA or whatever pro event has a mirror, and no one at a country club does? And they're the best putters.
Or just having an alignment stick or a club down or.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, putting's one of those things I always tell people. It's like, you're never going to drive it like Rory or or Adam Scott, but like you could putt it like Cam Smith in a couple of months if you just put in some time. Like putting is not a complicated skill. It's just moving a flat-faced object a few inches back and a few inches forward. It's literally just putting in the time, and nobody wants to because hitting balls is, more fun.
And to your point earlier off air, Keith, you said hashtag daily deposits on your story every day. And I used to have a little putting gate. Some of them have it where it has a little gate you can put on carpet. And I used to do that before bed. I used to love it. It's so easy. Doesn't matter if you put it in a hole. All you're doing is seeing how many times you can putt it through the gate and start it online. And you do that every night for fun. It is crazy how much better you start to roll the putt because you have confidence that you can start it online.
And I like the idea of not putting it to a hole because the outcome doesn't matter, right? Like it's out of your hands, really.
Yeah, so the hole is, can you start it online?
Right. Yeah. And most people, when I give putting lessons, can start to do that within 10 tries. It's not an overly complicated skill, but it's a practiced skill that obviously is just a matter of reps.
All right, we've got two. Let's see if we can squeeze in two more.
I may want to then finish with daily deposits. This got me thinking, Keith. This is good. So go ahead, keep going.
Nick Delgado 21 asks, and I think this is a really good one. We haven't addressed this specifically on the show before, but how to focus. We talk about it all the time, but how to do it, how to pick it, how to focus on just one swing thought. How do you help your players get their one thought?
Yeah, that's a really good question. It's an experimentation process. So we have things or looks or positions we're trying to put the golf club in. And what the player has to do, what I've done, what all other players that I've talked to about this have done is you have to figure out what thought gets most of the positions that you're trying to get to take care of themselves. So for me personally, I work really hard on keeping the club head a little outside my hands, going back like up to a club shaft parallel. That's always been something I've worked hard on. And I found through videoing my swing that if I do that, most of the positions I want at the top are there. And my transition is better because the club is where I need it to be. And so with my fault being to pull the club head inside early, that's what I did all through college and my youth. Keeping that club head outside my hands helps me hit it straighter with less draw. And I've just had to find that through trial and error. So it's not a lot of these things that people are searching for in the golf swing have to be found through self-discovery. And I think a coach's job is almost like guided self-discovery,
It's like a filtration system, don't you think?
Yeah. Like you don't want a coach that gives you everything because then there's no rewarding aha moment for yourself. And that's what's the most powerful, thing in life and in golf is like when you figured it out for yourself, it clicks so much more than if you're just, fed it by somebody. Mm-hmm. So it's a process that players have to go through themselves. It's very individualistic. Now a coach is there to help bounce ideas off of and, basically kind of tell you if you're in the right vein based on their expert eye of what the swing looks like when you say you're doing this thing. But it really should be up to the player because at the end of the day, the coach can't stand there and hit shots for you on the back nine, when you're trying to shoot a good score. He can't stand there with a camera on the golf course when you're trying to get it. It's on you and you've got to figure it out for yourself. And that's why it's a highly individualistic game, but that's why it's so rewarding when you do it because it was you and it wasn't anybody else.
Yeah. And I will say having a coach, I've talked about it a lot recently. It is such a stress reliever because before when you're trying to find your swing thought, you go out one round, it might not be working, but you don't know that that's the thing that's not working. It could be 1,000 other things. It could be hoping that this is the one thought. But when you have someone to help you and be a pressure tester and be a filtration system, you can say, hey, this is what I'm feeling. Is this in line with what we're going for, what we're working towards? And they can say yes or no. And you bring it back and you build on it. So without that, there's a lot of guesswork. And you're probably trying to fix something that isn't the thing that's causing it. And that's what creates frustration and hitting your head against the wall. Trust me, I did it for decades, over almost 2 decades. So that's another thing I'd throw in there. Last question, Sermon, you want to give them the last one from T-Chats 89?
Yeah. How to acknowledge your miss without it becoming a negative thought. Talk about maybe what some might call the post-shot routine, Keith.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really interesting. I think.
How about these questions from our passengers today?
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Questions. And there's a ton of good ones we need to get to. We might have a second episode. Really good stuff. Yeah.
You know, the misses are going to happen. We're not robots. We're humans, which means that we're prone to error. We're disposed to error, right? We're ever evolving. We're ever changing. Standing over a shot, concerned about the miss. Somebody said something really profound to me. They were like, if you're going to give as much time thinking about what bad could happen, it's only fair that you give equal time thinking about what good could happen. And
it's cool.
I'm not saying like stand over the shot saying this is going to be a perfect one after you've hit 50 crappy shots. Like, I think that's a bit, you know, nobody's going to do that, but there is a big power in just standing there and visualizing what you want to have happen and being fully committed to that shot. And I think, like, you know, the OG GOAT, Dr. Bob Rotella, said it, you know, in an interview I was listening to that was just so good. He's like, do you think a good swing with a shitty attitude, or a bad swing with a bad attitude is better than a bad swing with a good attitude? It's like, what do you want? Do you want both? Do you want the compounding of the bad swing and the bad attitude, or you want, you know, a bad swing and good attitude? And yes, it's maybe a little simplistic, but unless your misses are happening 75% of the time, which most people aren't in my experience, you got to be standing there thinking about like the good stuff that could be happening. I mean, whether you think about bad or you think about good, you know, you're both right, you know? So it's, you know, that's kind of what it comes down to.
That's great.
What you're saying is don't ignore the commonality in your miss. That's important to be aware of, but going into a shot, acknowledging that, but then refocusing on where you want it to go. I think that's what you're saying. It's not just about avoiding the miss. You have to focus on where you're trying to hit it while acknowledging the past misses, right?
Yeah, you acknowledge your past misses by picking appropriate targets.
Yeah.
And then you go, okay, I've picked appropriate target, but now I'm going to really hone in on hitting at that tree that I've selected. So
yeah,
I'm all for acknowledging what's out there that you don't want to go towards, but then reframing and going, okay, I've acknowledged that. That's done. We're not going to dwell on that. Now we're going after the corner of that bunker out there in the fairway with all of our commitment. And if you hit a bad shot, you hit a bad shot. I mean, it's golf. How many bad shots do we hit around? It's endless. But you just have to keep running that mental process because you know it's better. It's more productive than the alternative.
Before we let them go, Serm, we're pretty much at time. You want to bring up daily deposits?
I do. I want to sign off with this, Keith. That was great mailbag guest series. Keith, sign off and tell our listeners, I'm going to ask you a question and then dig in a little bit here. Tell us what the deposit system is, the change jar, as you call it.
Yep.
And tell our listeners how they can use that system after a bad round, a bad practice session, because I think you're going to get into about how to get many wins and feeling successful that day. So dive in and send us home here.
Yeah, it comes along to like having a growth mindset versus a fixed mindset, or being a process mindset versus an outcomes mindset. And so we have a change jar in our cabinet here at home. And it's just one of those things. And maybe, you know, the current generation, we're a very cashless society currently, but you know, you'd have a couple pieces of change in your pocket and maybe you just dump it into a little, you know, jar at home in passing when you're cleaning out your pockets at the end of the night. And over time, at the end of the year, before you know it, you've got $50, $75, even $100 in that change jar at the end of the year. And you go, oh, sweet, I'm going to buy myself a new X, Y, or Z. And it's not like you were trying to save. It just was like this sweet bonus at the end of the year. And it got me thinking of like, you know, even if I had a bad range session, if I really sat there and thought about it, I got something out of that that I could take into my my next practice. Maybe it was even like acknowledging that I shouldn't be practicing if my mindset or if I'm exhausted, or like, that's a revelation in itself. Like, hey, this is counterproductive. That's still a win. That's a learning moment. That's a daily, that's a deposit in the ATM that you're going to withdraw from later on. Right. So if you're not putting those deposits in, you've got no withdrawal. You've got, you don't have anything to withdraw. So you've got nothing to go back to. And, you know, just little practice sessions, swinging your golf club in slow motion for 5 minutes a day. That's a deposit, right? Hitting a few putts through the gate before you go to bed, Evan. That's a deposit, right? It's like, it all adds up. And I think we're looking for this big fireworks parade moment where we get to a single digit and everybody throws us this big, happy, you know, celebratory thing. And as you all know, when you pass, you know, milestones in your life, it doesn't happen. It's just another day goes by. And so if we're obsessed with those, thinking of these things in these big celebratory things, we're going to be super disappointed. So it's like really shifting your mind into like the process of putting a penny in the jar. And that's the goal. That's the goal. That's not even the process. That is the goal. It's just to put a penny in the jar and leave it at that.
Yeah.
I love it. That's love perspective. It's great for our listeners, Keith.
Yeah. It's just like someone trying to lose weight, you know?
Yep.
If you think you want to get under 200 pounds or whatever, and you're 250 now.
Yeah.
If you're checking the scale every day, you're probably going to be pretty frustrated. Yeah. But if you put in a daily workout every day and you try and eat better every day, you lift your head up. Just like the round we were talking about being scared of or not deserving pars and birdies. You look up, you make a few pars. You look up, you've lost 30 pounds.
Yep.
You know, same thing. So, Keith, thank you so much, guys. If you like what you heard, which I don't know if you could, if how you couldn't have, follow Keith at Keith Bennett Golf. That's two N's, two T's.
Yes, and thank you.
We're going to need to have you back or even do this in person in Arizona when we come out and see you. And I want to do a deep dive on the mental side of snowboarding and extreme sports and relate that to, because that's very unique to have gone through that. And now as a golf coach and a great player yourself. So maybe that's podcast two when we bring you back on the train.
Hey, anytime you guys want to let me aboard the train, I'll hop on and I'll enjoy the ride, as they say.
Hell yeah. All right. Thanks, Keith.
Thanks, Keith. Great to see
Thanks
you.
Thanks so much, guys. It was a lot of fun. We'll chat soon.
Thanks for hopping aboard, guys. Before you hop off the train, I think I got something you're going to love. Our new YouTube channel is growing fast. It's something I'm putting a lot of focus and time and my heart into. So if you guys like the podcast, our YouTube is going to come out with the video podcast of the audio version every Monday on our YouTube channel, as well as more and more videos to help you enjoy the ride and keep your game on track. So go to youtube.com/@thepartrain or just search the Par Train on the YouTubes, and hopefully we can keep riding this train together. Thanks again for hopping aboard. Hope you guys enjoy the ride.